This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia, with our fourth podcast. Thus far, we have covered reading the water to identify the various feeding stations. We've talked about the food. We've talked about how to spot the fish in the stream. Now, beginning with this series and going on for about the next eight series, we're going to be talking about the tactics for actually fishing to the trout, both in the smaller streams and then in the larger streams. Since the seasonal sequence of how we handle these situations is really what governs the flies you use and the tactics you use, I'm going to start in the spring and fish our way all the way through until fall. Now, I'm going to gear this to what I find here in Virginia. If you're fishing in North Carolina, this would be earlier than what I'm talking about. If you're fishing up in the Adirondacks and Catskills or out in the Rockies, you're going to be talking about a later time period. But what I'm going to be talking about today is the mountain streams, the small freestone streams averaging probably 20 feet wide. The pools would be 20 feet long. These I'm going to start covering in what we do here in Virginia starting in early March, and I'm going to go all the way through to April. Then next week, we're going to jump into the larger streams at the same time period. Then in following sequence, we'll walk you through the season. Now, if you get over here in the mountain streams throughout the mid-Atlantic area in, we'll say, early March, the two problems you're confronting are high streams and cold streams. Now, there are a couple different ways you can get around the high stream problem. The one thing I often do is just, if I'm parking at the bottom of the mountain and I see more water than I want, I'll just hike up in this mountain maybe 2 or 3 miles to get on up into the head of that, because every one of those little hollows you walk by is going to remove some of the water from the stream, and as you get up higher, you've got a more manageable level. Now, an excellent thing to know if you're familiar with the streams or if you have topo maps is where a significant feeder would actually come into that stream. For instance, several years ago, a good friend was visiting. He was a very good mountain trout fisherman, but he didn't have that much time to fish, so I wanted to get my friend into the best water. So we parked at the bottom of the mountain, and I put him into the stream and started him off, and I walked on upstream probably 2 miles, 3 miles, until I came to a feeder that came in that carried about one-third of the water volume of the water I'd put my friend in. And I had fantastic fishing in that little feeder. We met back down at the car that evening, and I inquired about how he had done, and he said, "I just had too much water. I just simply couldn't handle it." And I looked out in the main stream, and sure enough, I had put him in the worst water, and I'd taken the best water. So if you're familiar with the stream, you've got too much water down low, see if there are feeders upstream that you can go into, because this is one way to get around it. Now, a lot of the streams that we're fishing have roads, either National Forest roads or Park Service roads, into the head. For instance, down in the Smokies, you'll have a lot of roads coming down the Blue Ridge Parkway that'll get you into the heads of many of these streams. West Virginia, a lot of National Forest roads go into the head of some of those streams. So you can drive to the head area, park up in there, walk cross country to the stream, or if you're close to the stream, just walk downstream a mile or two and then turn and fish your way back up. So those are the three basic ways I get around the high water situation that may occur with me in early March. Now, the low water temperature is a different problem. There's not a whole lot you can do about this, but the one thing you can consider is that when there are springs running into the stream, then this can influence the water temperature. Many of these springs will be coming into a stream at about 50 degrees. When you consider that early March with us, we're going to have water temperatures probably run 37, 38 degrees. So if you've got a little feeder spring even coming into the stream that's 50 degrees, that's going to warm up the water that you've got there. Then all you got to do is slip downstream and fish where that comes in. I'm a sucker to take these water temperatures. If I'm walking up a mountain stream, even in the middle of July, and I come to a little feeder going across the trail, I'll stick my thermometer in it so I'll know what's going on, because that can really help you a whole lot. Now that you got a handle on these two things, let's look at some of the tactics we're going to use. The main thing you want to think about early in the year is that you're probably going to be forced to nymphs if you're talking about water 36, 38 degrees. Now, the nymphs have to get down on the fish's level. You want to look out there, evaluate the stream, like we were talking about in reading the water. You want to evaluate the stream. What makes this a little more difficult than the dry fly fishing is you've got to get a handle on the underwater currents. So if you assume the fish are going to be lying deep in the middle of a deep pool, you look upstream, try to see where the major currents are that'll drift a nymph down in there, shoot it up in there, and then let it ride down through there. Now, strangely enough, the factor that's going to govern your success here in many cases is the casting position you select. If you position yourself in such a way that you've got to cast across real, real fast currents, you just killed yourself because you've got to be in control of what's happening in order to be successful. In fact, I'd say in nymph fishing in the spring, control is the bottom word. You've got to be in control of the fly placement, control of the drift, control of the strike, and in control and setting the hook. Now, the good fisherman, Glenn Morrison, my fishing buddy, is one of the best mountain trout nymph fishermen, and even in the Madison, Glenn is outstanding. He always fishes a short line. That's one sign of a good nymph fisherman, that he's fishing a relatively short line because he is in control in what's going on. Now, certainly there's a trade-off there. If you crowd the fish too much, you just spook them. But you've got to be in control of that drift in order to get a natural drift of the fish, and then you've got to see what's going on. And you're going to do this predominantly by positioning yourself in the right place. Right. Once you've achieved this, the major problem is going to be detecting the strike, because a nymph rolling along the bottom of the stream, on the upstream dead drift nymphing, you're going to have to see the strike. Now, a method I use is to place two scientific angler indicators along our 9-foot bright butt leader. I'll have one of these 3 feet above the nymph and one 6 feet above the nymph. Then I can watch these, and no matter what depth I'm drifting my fly, I can watch these and detect the strike. If it happens to be a real deep pool, both of my indicators are way down in there and I can't see those, then I watch the bright butt of the leader. Now, that's with the dead drift nymphing. That's the one method of nymph fishing that we use ourselves and we teach in our classes here in the Blue Ridge Mountains, because that is a very effective technique. And once you manage the upstream dead drift nymphing, you've got a guy to handle on the whole works. Now, the lissoring lift is similar to this, but it's a slightly different technique in that you're casting upstream, you're allowing the nymph to get down in there. Then when the nymph approaches what you anticipate to be the hot spot, you're gradually picking that up with your rod tip just to lift it up off the water. This, in essence, is trying to mimic an emerging aquatic insect. And in some cases, this does a better job than just upstream dead drift nymphing. Now, the third method I use is one I learned from old Charlie Brooks out in West Yellowstone. Within Charlie's books, this is referred to as the Brooks technique. However, I call my method a swing nymphing technique because Charlie used a very fancy hidey head, we'd call it today, that he made up himself. We can use this with a floating line, so I call this swing nymphing. Now, in swing nymphing, again, this is going to be only applicable when you've got quite a bit of water in the stream. You're going to set yourself up right beside the hot spot, and then you're going to cast upstream, thinking about the goal is to fish your fly, again, right in that hot spot the best you can. But to get it down there to him, you're going to have to cast upstream. First, you're going to let it sink deeply, then lift your rod tip and just swing that nymph back down along the stream bottom so you're in constant touch with it, because here you're going to feel that strike. But swing nymphing is very, very effective. But here again, you're going to feel this strike, which is entirely different than the upstream dead drifting, when you're going to watch those indicators and you're going to see those strikes. Many of the beginners in our schools actually get some of their best action this way, because once they get tight to it, they can feel that trout strike right away. Now, let's talk a minute about streamer fishing. Again, we're talking about early March on into maybe the middle to the latter part of March, and this is good when the stream has quite a bit of water in it. Now, the basic streamer technique, of course, now when we're saying streamers, we mean minnow imitation, is to go down and across stream with it. Now, you've got to have a fair amount of water, because if you're wading downstream, you're going to scare a lot of fish unless the stream is very high. But the down and across technique, where you're going to strip your fly across the current, is the basic meat and potatoes of streamer fishing. And if you've got enough water, it's going to work. Now, the other method I use is what I call sweeping a streamer. This is quite similar to the Brooks method on nymph. Now, in sweeping a streamer, again, I'm setting myself right up beside the hot spot of the stream. I'm going to cast upstream, let my streamer sink down deeply, then swim this right back down through the deepest part of the pool, trying to feel that strike. This is very, very effective, especially when you've got a whole lot of water in the stream. Swing nymphing, sweeping a streamer, basically the same thing, but just swing it right back down along the bottom of the stream. Now, a third technique I use in fishing streamers early in the year are what I call a bounce retrieve. Now, the bounce retrieve, I'm wading upstream, I'm casting upstream. As soon as that fly touches the water, I allow, anywhere from 2 to maybe 5 seconds for it to sink down pretty deeply, maybe even have a split shot 6 inches above it. But I'm going to let that sink down deeply. Now, as that's drifting back downstream to me, I'm going to have a tight line from my line hand down to the fly, and I'm going to use the rod tip to make that bounce up off the stream bottom. It's somewhat like upstream dead drift nymphing, except here I'm tight all the way down to it, and I lift it up off the bottom to sort of make it act like a wounded minnow swimming back down through the stream. So you've got your nymph fishing, you've got your streamer fishing. Now, the dry fly fishing can be worthwhile. The magic number in here for me personally is 40 degrees. If I'm fishing a mountain brook trout stream, water temperature 40, 42 degrees, I expect to get some fairly good action unless the stream is ripping. Now, there's an interplay. The more water you've got, even at a good water temperature, you might get shot down. But if you've got a reasonable water temperature, we'll say 42, 44 degrees, middle of March, latter part of March, at a reasonable water level, you can do some good on fishing dry flies. Couple requirements I have for my own personal fishing on dry flies. Since there's a lot of water in the stream, I want something that's going to float well. I want something that I can see out there on the stream, and if I can match the first or second mayflies that are going to be coming off, that's that much the better. Actually, those statements were the request of two gentlemen in my fly tying class in one of my college courses many years ago, and that turned out to be how I developed the Mr. Rapidan. Something floats well, something I can see, and something that matches the early season hatches. We're going back to that reading the water. Let's just start at the lower part of that stream. Now, see, in these small streams, you've almost got to fish upstream, because if you tried fishing downstream, you're probably going to spook them unless you had a whole lot of water, like we were talking about with the streamers. When you're going upstream, the first thing you're going to come to back there is the lip of the pool. Now, this is dammed up in the tail of the pool. The water's dammed up by a boulder, two boulders. The trout can hold in front of that lip. You cast your dry fly 2-3 feet up above them and let it drift right back down. At this time of the year, this may be the primary feeding station in that pool. That is where the biggest trout's going to be. Now, the mid-pool area, that section right physically out in the middle of the pool, can be worthwhile if there's some big boulders down there to give them protection. You're seldom going to get your biggest trout in the mid-pool area because it's just not as efficient for them to feed there as it would be in the lip or the corner that I'll get to in a minute. But since I'm going up through the stream, I'll shoot about 3 or 4 casts across the tail of the pool and also the lip of the pool and the mid-pool area just to see what's going on. Now, the back eddy that forms over on the sides of many pools, and this is a great big Lazy Susan thing, maybe as large as an automobile. The back eddy is appealing to the trout in the spring because it's a slow current. And if you get into some good hatches, many fish will pull back over in here. I remember one day I was fishing up one of the mountain streams in the Blue Ridge Mountains, saw a lot of fish feeding back in a very big back eddy with the blue quill hatch that was on, and a lot of the fish I assumed were coming up to the blue quills. Well, we had had fairly warm water for that time of the year, but the air temperature had dropped back to where it was almost down to freezing again. What was happening at these blue quills were getting trapped back there in the back eddy, and they were just floating round and rounds in rafts, and the fish were feeding on them like crazy. But I really wasn't taking as many fish out of the back eddies as I thought I should, so I crawled up. I'd caught enough to be satisfied, but I crawled up to see what was really happening. Because of that cold air temperatures, a lot of the flies couldn't make their getaway, and these nymphs were floating around in the surface film. I put a nymph on, dressed it with silicone cream, went back down and fished it right into film, and I caught fish like crazy. So the back eddy can be worthwhile. Now, I said if the biggest fish in the pool wasn't on the lip, he was going to be in the corner. This is that thing that forms over. The corner is a thing. It may be the size of a dinner plate, maybe as big as your living room chair, but it's formed over on the side of the incoming riffle against the bank where water goes downstream, hits some kind of obstruction, cannot get out of the pool, turns back upstream, is shunted across the face of this boulder. The big trout will often lie in that back corner facing away from the stream. Now, they're facing the way that current is going to bring that food. And all you got to do is move in relatively close. Heavy water here, you're not going to spook these guys. Move in relatively close, make a short cast, sometime less than 10 feet. Drop your dry fly on the water. Mr. Rapidan would be perfect. Let it drift across there. Now, you only want the fly in maybe literally 10, 12 inches a leader on the water. You want to use your, stick your rod tip it up in the air, use your arm to bridge that current, and let it drift right across that corner to the trout. This is a very, very effective way to fish early in the year. Now, that rounds out the tactics I use from, we'll say, 1st of March on into maybe middle of April. Now, next week we're going to be talking about how to handle the larger stream at this time period. Then after this, we're going to come back and start in the middle of March. The podcast following that, we're going to come back to the middle of March and March go all the way through until spring. This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. If you have any questions on any of this, just please call me. I'll be glad to help you in any way I can. Thank you very much.